Welcome to another episode of Conversations for Financial Professionals, where we are shaping the next generation of advice. And I have a very special guest, Jessica Medina. Jessica, you are a former attorney turned accredited financial counselor on a mission to help attorneys figure out their finances so they can pursue their true passions, no matter their salary. You graduated from Columbia Law School as a single mom of twins with over $200,000 in student loans. I want to say that number again, because it just, when I read it there, I'm like, really? $200,000? But $200,000 in student loans. You took a stroll through big law and the federal government, and now you teach lawyers how to use their money to finance their dream lives. Welcome to the podcast, my friend.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, how did we connect? I know we connected on LinkedIn, but it was through someone else that referred.
It was through the AFC community. So yes, as an accredited financial counselor, we are part of the AFCPE, and that organization basically runs all the accredited financial counselors. And I know that you play a role in that community as well. Just kind of helping.
I have some friends there. Sandra Davis is a good friend. I've just recently met Stacey Livingstone. Hoyt, who's another person inside the Jumpstart community. So I've been getting my, let's say, my professional tentacles out there to try to connect with as many people as I can in this effort to kind of bring virtual mentorship / coaching to the next generation financial professional. So I'm really excited to talk about this, your story, you know, kind of career changer, exploring these new frontiers. And as we were saying before we started recording, you know, you have a really interesting, I would say, more traditional former career that usually people don't leave that type of career to do what you're doing now. So we're definitely going to unpack that. But I think what I want to start off with saying is your story, as I know it right now, just kind of shows what things are possible. And so I'm sure you had these moments in your life where you were shown possibilities. Is there anything that kind of stands out in particular?
Well, I think as a lawyer, like you said, that is kind of a career that people don't leave, right? This is a lifetime profession. This is something that you put a lot of time and energy into even getting into the profession. And so the idea that once you become a lawyer, that one day you may not be a lawyer is actually one of the themes of a lot of the folks that I work with. That it is a point of contention of, right, can you even leave the law once you have made yourself into a lawyer? But I think when you have decided both mentally and emotionally that you no longer want to be a lawyer, that's when the existential crisis begins. And that's when you really start going down these holes of, and what else can I be if I'm not a lawyer? And so I think it actually is, you know, for this profession in particular, thinking of possibility is really, really hard because we are so conditioned to believe that this is the only thing that we should ever want to be. Mm-hmm. And so I will tell you, when I was having my own crisis, I thought I wanted to run a Subway. I thought I wanted to run a daycare. I thought I wanted to do anything other than practice law, because I was just so stressed out and overwhelmed by my work and the combination of family life. As you mentioned, I was a single mom raising two boys. But it did take some work and it did take some soul searching. And I will tell you, I kind of stumbled on financial coaching. It wasn't on my radar. But once I learned about it, it was the rabbit hole, and it was going down, learning more, getting more excited about it, realizing what I could do with this as kind of my next career. And then I was off to the races.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's unpack that. Let's talk about the discovery process. Cause that's what when you said that, it is signal discovery. It's almost like, so you have boys. So, you know, I remember my children when they were younger, and they had this just natural born curiosity around things, you know, just kind of exploring and kind of seeing, you know, life, no matter the career, I think, puts these pressures on us so that we stop dreaming and stop exploring. You did a couple of things that I think we don't need to gloss over, and I want you to tell your story. You know, you got fed up, right? There was enough of this, right? And then there was a space that you created for yourself to have some time to think, right? Some margin to, and then to then explore what you're thinking about and seeing what suits you. Is, I don't know. I don't want to put words in your mouth. How did your journey into financial coaching begin?
I mean, I think it really, it was a multi-step journey. And part of it is because I do think that leaving certain professions, you do need to take a couple of steps, because just, you know, stepping out into the wild wilderness can be frightening, especially when you are super risk averse, as I tend to be, and law school just made it worse. But, you know, my journey to financial coaching, I find to be a bit ironic, because I never liked thinking about money. It wasn't something we talked about in my family growing up. I grew up in a home where it was considered rude to talk about how much people make or how much things cost. And I went straight into big law from law school. So I basically had some room to not really have to worry about money. I graduated with $200,000 in student loans. So it's not like I didn't have a lot of obligations. That being said, I was being paid very well for what I was doing. So I don't want to gloss over the fact that there are plenty of lawyers who graduate with that kind of debt. It's actually pretty typical, sadly. But they don't necessarily go into, you know, the SCADN salary scale. That being said, when you're living in a metro area and you're raising a family and you have that much in student loans, it doesn't go as far as you would like it to. Right? So, you know, thinking, gosh, why am I not swimming in money when I'm making all this money? There was obviously a problem with management there, but I made enough to not have it be, you know, like I was going to lose my apartment or lose my car or anything along those lines. When I decided I no longer wanted to be at my firm, I had always wanted to work in the government, and I ended up at the Securities and Exchange Commission, which for somebody who wasn't interested in money was also a very, you know, unorthodox.
Yeah. You want to talk about irony twice in a row there.
Exactly. But that actually became part of my journey to where I am now. I had been doing securities work at my firm. So I was familiar. I knew people at the agency. And when I started there, I took a 50% pay cut. So a huge portion of my growth was now being able to live on something that was maybe a little more typical of a of a salary for a lawyer, and figuring out how to maneuver that with my family. And part of that was really just changing my priorities. It was worth it for me to leave, to go to the government, to do work that I thought would be more fulfilling, and, you know, to just make less in doing that. But then I realized, oh, I don't even like this a lot. And this is the best gig I could possibly have as a lawyer. Wow. There's something fundamentally wrong. And that was a lot harder, right? Realizing that I didn't want to be at my firm, that's typical. 99% of people leave their firm. That's the system, right? It's set up that way. But to get to basically, you know, a job where I am intellectually challenged, I have work-life balance, I'm being paid very well for my time, I have benefits, I could telework, I had vacation, you know, all of these things that you're supposed to want and enjoy from your work. And I just didn't love going into work every day. I didn't Wow. love the actual practice of law. And that was a bit earth-shattering for me, because I didn't know what else I was supposed to do with my brain. I had trained it for over a decade to just think like this, to just do this kind of work, and it was supposed to sustain me for my entire life. And so when I realized that, that's when I started having dreams about Subway. And I started having dreams about doing something else, but not even knowing what I was possibly qualified for, right? Because all I know how to do is be a lawyer. And it was a bit of a process. I want to say, I think being at the SEC, because of the nature of the work, right? Government work is just very different from private practice. The demands are very different. I did have a little bit of more mental space to start thinking about something outside of my traditional, you know, my traditional career. And that helped. And it was a little bit about thinking, you know, kind of all the things you hear career coaches telling you to do. Like, what do you like about your job? What kinds of things, you know, make you light up when you're at work?
Well, let's explore that for just a second here, because I think, what's resonating with me is the fact of when a career changer or an aspiring financial professional comes to me that has, you know, a career or a body of work doing something for, you know, let's say 4 or 5 years or longer, one of the first things I tell them to do is kind of explore their why. And like, and I mean it not from this like pie in the sky, you know, unicorn type of deal, but like really, why do you want to get into financial services you know, across the spectrum of things that you can do, like explore that, because this is definitely one of those industries, I would say, that lends itself to, and everybody probably feels this way, but I think there's so much more servanthood in this particular profession that you really need to evaluate why you're trying to do it, because otherwise you might end up not only injuring yourself and doing things bad for yourself, but there's other people on the line. So I don't know. I think I'm down with the whole exploring your why thing. And I know maybe you did have a chance of doing that when you made the transition.
No, I think, the surface level, right, is think about what skills you have. Think about what parts of your job do you enjoy. I think the analysis that you're referring to is much more important and much more useful in deciding what your future career could look like and what types of careers might be a good fit for your personality, for the things that you're interested in, things that are going to keep you motivated, right? Because I could say, well, I'm very organized, I'm very detail oriented, and I'm tenacious. I'm a lawyer. Like, those things are pretty difficult, but those aren't the things that drive me. And the fact that you talk about service, that was such a huge part of what I loved about practicing law. It was why I went into it in the first place. It was why I ended up in the government, because I wanted to be serving the public. And so it's interesting, right? I'm an accredited financial counselor now. I'm just a different kind of counselor. I used to be a counselor at law. Now I counsel people about their money, but it's the same type of skills in terms of I am meeting you where you are. I'm trying to figure out what your issues are. I'm trying to give you advice and guidance to get you to a better place, but I'm also teaching you how to think about those issues in a way that serves you for the rest of your life. And that was a part of the financial industry that I was not exposed to at the SEC, right? We did a lot of bad
talk
actors.
About that, because I don't. It, you just said something really beautifully that I think maybe is even lost on. Well, you know, it's probably definitely lost on the consumer financial services because of how the machine markets to them and blah blah blah. Come buy this product. Come do this service. AUM this. AUM that. Blah blah blah. But even maybe sometimes practitioners, that gets lost on us, that we are really just facilitators to a set of information that are going to help people reach their goals. I often say that, you know, financial planning is not necessarily easy, but it is simple, right? It's how do I take my limited time and money and spread those across unlimited choices? Like, that's essentially what I'm helping people do. But I think because of the way the industry is set up, that's not always forefront primary focus for people that are inside the industry. Would you agree with that?
I think that's right, because I think the flashiest parts of the industry don't focus on that, right? So the things that you read about in the headlines, and sadly, right, any headline involving the SEC means that there's a bad actor involved, something has gone horribly wrong, and people have lost money, and a lot of people, right, are now in pain. And that's what I dealt with in enforcement, only bad actors. So I was exposed to investment advisors who should not have been giving advice. I was exposed to pump and dump schemes. I was exposed to Ponzi schemes, right? All of the bad parts of the financial industry that give it a bad rap. There was no reason for me to meet with the amazing investment advisors who are walking their clients through to get them to their dreams, right? That are helping them think through these difficult choices. And they are difficult choices, especially when you're not familiar with how the different choices may play out, right? I wasn't exposed to those folks. So I got a very bad taste in my mouth about what that sector of the financial industry was about. And the folks who, you know, who are touted, you know, the people who are running the hedge funds and making, you know, millions upon billions of dollars, managing their money, other people's money, taking really large risks with money, sometimes doing well, sometimes not doing so well. Those are the ones that the spotlight is on. And so I think that, you know, all the people out there doing really good work, they are the unsung heroes, right? None of us hear about them. And only if you are actually working with someone might you understand how beneficial that service is and how much of a relationship it needs to be so that they understand you. And so I think, you know, my experience at the SEC actually, it introduced me to the financial industry in a way that I had not been introduced before, but also turned me off. to a vast majority of it. I knew I didn't want to sell any complex financial products. I didn't want to help people on tax planning because accountants had their own issues. I didn't want to help anybody, you know, I didn't want to sell insurance products, right? All of that stuff kind of fell under what we were regulating. And then I found the Accredited Financial Counselor Program. And it was just a totally different area of the financial industry that I did not even realize you could be a professional at. I didn't realize that there were folks who could help you with the foundational aspects of money management, because this is the land of DIY, right? You need to be able to make your own budget. You need to be able to pay off your student loans and figure out the best strategy on your own. That's what the web is for. Just Google it and you'll be able to figure it out. If that were true, nobody would have problems at that point in their financial life, but it's not true.
No, I would agree. So I don't know. Do you know Wilson Muskinen of Money Speakeasy? Okay, so he's a financial coach also. And a while ago, we had a conversation on a podcast, and I use this illustration often because I think it's a beautiful word picture of where things are, which is there's probably one through, let's call it 15 steps from financial illiteracy all the way to financial literacy. And I can do this, you know, not necessarily DIY, but I have enough knowledge in order to not screw things up. Let's put it that way. But the focus of the industry has been so much on those people that are in, let's call it stages or steps 13 through 15, because they have the wealth, they have, you know, assets to manage. So that's where the money is, and that's where the industry focuses on. But the reality is the large portion of the population probably needs something further down the spectrum, just because of how schools don't really teach this, how, you know, you're pushed into, you know, really big decisions, you know, that can affect the rest of your life by taking on, you know, student loan debt while you're in college, blah, 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 blah. But the point is the most of the population is steps 1 through 12. And nobody focuses on that. And that's why I'm so happy about what you do as essentially a financial coach, because on this continuum, there's these different spots that people fall into. And I just wonder your thoughts about that continuum and maybe where financial coaching is applied upon that continuum.
Oh, I absolutely agree. And I think that is a really nice way to think about it, so people can see that there is a spectrum, right? And there are different places where you can enter financial literacy. Not everybody starts at zero, but not everybody starts at 12, right? So there's going to be people all along that line. And where I see financial coaching, and specifically as an accredited financial counselor, my job is to help people understand their money and from their own personality. Right. And so I'm not only helping you make financial decisions in terms of, you know, that are based in your priorities, that are based in your values. I'm also helping you see how the habits that you develop in your own life and the way that you interact with money and oftentimes other things in your life, right, might be affecting the management of those things and helping you build the habits that will lead to wealth. I don't help you manage your wealth. That's steps 13, 14, and 15. And then I refer all of my people out, you know, to all of my licensed professional friends. But helping folks with, you know, just figuring out what's important to them, making sure that they're spending their money where they actually value, and making sure that they're, you know, understanding the difference between paying down debt versus financial growth and some of the opportunity cost involved in that. I obviously have a lot of clients with a large amount of student loans. And when you have federal student loans and private student loans, figuring out the best strategy is not straightforward. Sadly, the federal government, although they do give out lots of money, there's all kinds of terms and conditions attached to it. And understanding that whole environment can be very complicated. Now, granted, my clients are also very busy. So this isn't something where they have all the time in the world, right, to be Googling everything and figure out all of these different pros and cons to different decisions. But that's where I see my role, and that's where I see financial coaches sitting. They're basically, you know, the people who could take a personal finance book and pick out the things that actually apply to you for your situation, so you don't have to go through the whole book and try to figure it all out for you. They will also make sure that you actually do the things that you're supposed to be doing, right? Because that's where the rubber meets the road. Sometimes knowing the answer isn't enough. I know exactly what I should be doing. I'm still not doing it. That doesn't seem to be a knowledge problem. That seems to be an accountability problem, right? Yeah. It's a habit forming problem. Yeah. And that's also what I help my clients with.
No, Brian Moran, author of 12 Week Year, was on in season 3. And we talked about the notion around, I mean, his whole book is the notion that people don't lack ideas, they lack execution. So it usually is very rarely a knowledge problem. I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, I think that's probably evident by the fact that, you know, most people know what they need to be doing to lose weight or, you know, build muscle or that stuff, but they just don't do it because they don't have the willingness there or the system. I wonder how, and I think this is a setup question maybe, but I wonder how you were drawn to this particular specialization with working with lawyers, or as we call it in the industry, niching, based on your own situation. Talk about why this focus on helping attorneys build their wealth. Because there's people out there that I'm pretty sure that may want to work with you or came across you and you're like, oh, not the best fit, because this is where I want to kind of, you know, create my zone of genius, if you will.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you're starting out, you want to help everyone, right? Or at least if you're the kind of servant like I am, you want to help everyone. You want to help everyone with every single money problem they could possibly have. And to be honest, that can be pretty exhausting because there's a lot of different money problems out there and there's a lot of different folks out there. And so what I found was after working with all different types of clients, I probably spend the AFC certification requires a certain number of practice hours. So I had to be working with real clients before I could even qualify for my certification. And while I was doing that, I would work with anybody. I didn't care if you were a lawyer or not. Like that wasn't my focus. But I realized that the more that I honed in on who I wanted to help, the better I got at helping those people because I saw more of similar, not identical, but similar situations, right? I can now tell people, I have seen dozens of lawyer budgets. Believe me, I know what's happening at the firms. I know what's happening with your spending. We can come up with solutions. And so that is a benefit, I think, just for me as a coach. It's a benefit for my clients because they get better service. Because I've seen their situation so many times, I'm more well-versed in how to handle it and what the different creative strategies are. I also think that, you know, for me personally, I think that lawyers are underserved, especially in this area of financial guidance. There is no lack of cold calling of associate offices at law firms. Everyone from, you know, all the big shops, they basically just go down different extensions, calling people, seeing if they'd like help managing their money. Because the assumption is that folks that work at big law firms have a bunch of cash lying around and they need help investing it. When in reality, folks at law firms have a bunch of student loans lying around that they're flipping out about, and they don't even know how to begin on the investment side because the debt and the budgeting part is so out of whack. And so—
Wow. So let me pause there. I think you just gave me a great marketing idea. So anybody that's listening that's in this industry, whether you're on the, let's call it, financial coaching side or the financial advice / planner side where you actually securities license or whatnot. I think this is interesting because you would not otherwise have that take unless you worked extensively with attorneys. Like you just wouldn't know those, but you wouldn't have that knowledge. And I wonder how many different industries have those type of nuances, whether it be educators or nurses or physicians or whatever. Maybe you don't even go with a vocational niche, but I mean, there's so much power in that level of specialization that I think, you know, from a just selfishly speaking, as an entrepreneur, it just seems that your business would be so much more scalable because you don't have like 15 different SKUs in the back of your brain about the type of people you work with. It's like one or two. And you can become really good at that. Coaching. Now, that's probably a topic that you either know you needed or you don't. So I'm not here to tell you that you need a coach. However, what I will tell you is that as an existing financial professional, sometimes you might find yourself a little inconsistent or even frustrated when you compare your success to those of your peers. That's because you have more in you, my friend. You got more to pull out. You got some more potential. Enter the Masterclass Coaching Lab. Having consulted some of the top advisors over the past few years, including building my own wealth management firm, I know what it takes to take you and your team to the next level. So as one of my coaching clients, we're gonna have a no-fluff, customized plan to absolutely crush your goals. No BS, no fluff. Need to break away and start your own firm? Got you covered. Need to find your ideal client? Got you covered. Maybe you need help finding that ideal client or implementing some ROI producing systems and workflows. Got you covered. In either case, the Masterclass Coaching Lab is probably for you. Look, if you're serious about getting to the next level and you need some assistance, all you need to do is go to thejumpstartcoachinglab.com/masterclass and get started with your application. Let's get back to that episode. I mean, I guess the call to action is find a specialization, because that actually works. And I wonder if you can speak to how it's been working for you as far as the growth of your firm and who you're working with and who you want to work with.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it helps because I am also more clear on who I am speaking to and who I want to help. And the reason why I chose, you know, big law attorneys is because that was me. I'm basically just helping myself. You know, if I could reach back in time and take, you know, Jessica from 15 years ago and teach her all the things that I know now, I probably could have left the law a lot sooner if I had been able to figure it out, right? I would have way more in my investment accounts, but we're not going to get into that. But, you know, that is part of it. It is my lived experience, and I intimately understand what those lawyers are going through. But you know, I think that part of it is that, you know, I want to help them, number one, because I do think they are underserved. I think people kind of pass over them and think that they have it all figured out because, oh, you went to law school. Don't you know everything about money? No, we went to law school to avoid math. That's like the little known secret and the dirty little secret in the legal world. We didn't want to do math and we didn't want to do science. That's why I became lawyers. And so, you know, there isn't this natural affinity to managing finances in the legal world. There's just this assumption that we know what we're doing. And there's also an assumption that all of us have lots of it, which is also not true. So, you know, I was going to be able to speak to that. But I also think that, you know, having a focus not only helps you with the kind of work that you're doing, it also just helps in the kind of message that you're going to put out there. Do people who are not lawyers still contact me? Yes. And sometimes I have to make a decision about whether I have the bandwidth to take on somebody who is not within my specialty area, right? Because I kind of got this down now, and it's kind of, you know, that it's a pretty easy lift for me to figure out a lawyer scenario because I've seen so many of them. Mm-hmm. When I have somebody who has, you know, kind of a different situation, it's, you know, it really is a case by case basis about whether I think that I'm going to be the best coach for them, or whether I think somebody else might be a better coach for them because they have a different specialty, a different skill set. But a lot of people find me, and my messages, you know, what I post on LinkedIn, or what they see on my website, or they read my story and they think, oh, I think she would just be able to help me. They kind of gloss over the fact that, you know, it looks like I only help lawyers. I also have, you know, an FAQ on my website. Like, do I only help lawyers? No, I have some non-lawyer clients and they're amazing. But it isn't, you know, it isn't my specialty area.
Right. No, I think you're bringing up a lot of good points here. And I think the main thing to underscore, at least for me, listening to you talk about this, is the message. It's totally the message. I mean, you set expectations with the message about the engagement with the you know, prospective client and all that. I wonder, as we kind of transition to maybe some tangible tips for career changers, which of course you're, you know, kind of the expert to talk on, like, what way or ways should they be thinking about their, let's call it, existing skill set of, you know, this package of transferable skills that every career changer that's been in, you know, even somewhat professionally successful has. But they often, when they come into this industry, because of the way that the industry is constructed, they don't always look at those as positives or strengths. Matter of fact, that's a lot of the work that I do in Jumpstart is trying to help people see these as strengths, not necessarily putting spin on it, but just like really like realizing that the fact that, you know, that you've had face-to-face conversations and, you know, de-escalated conflict, like that's a real valuable skill in this industry, actually. So make sure you want to put that, you know, to the forefront of your resume or however you interview. But I wonder if you can speak to some tips on how to maybe talk about or present or, you know, craft those transferable skills that career changers have.
Yeah, I think part of it is a process of figuring out, you know, you really have to know your own story and you really have to understand what were the pivotal points in your own transformation, whether, you know, many financial coaches have had a financial transformation in their life. It's one of the things that inspired them to get into the business. I know a handful that have just always been really good with money, and that is their story, that they have always been really good with money. But normally there is some sort of pivotal financial moment. You want to understand those moments very well from your own life, because what you have learned, you and whatever skills you're bringing from your other career, that's what's going to speak to the people who are going through similar circumstances. And that's what's going to resonate with your people that are also looking for that kind of transformation from that pivotal moment. And I think in terms of, you know, actual skills, you know, there's so much that you learn in any job, right? You always are going to have, you're most likely going to be dealing with other people, right, at some point. And financial coaching in particular is a people business. I can't coach anything other than a human. There's no algorithm that's going to hire me to coach them, right? So this is a human-based business. Now, granted, I came from a human-based business, right? Even though I'm dealing with a lot of legal concepts, I always had a client at the end of the road. So when I think about my career as a lawyer and my career as an accredited financial counselor, like I said, I'm just a different kind of counselor. But it took me some time to remember that. When I started, I wanted to completely shed my identity as a lawyer because I had been known as a lawyer my entire life and I was trying to create this new thing. I was gonna be like a phoenix rising from the ashes and here I am, I'm brand new. And that's not what happened at all. It became more powerful that I was also a lawyer and a financial coach. I thought that it would take away from my identity as a financial coach, but it made it so much stronger. And it makes it very easy for people to recognize whether I might be the coach for them. So I think especially for folks who might be transitioning out of what I like to call, you know, professions that define your existence, right? If you introduce yourself by your profession, that's a profession that defines your existence, right? You know those people.
That's hilarious. I love that.
Right? I'm a doctor. I'm an architect. You know, whatever it is.
No, I get. I've had that happen a couple of times where people correct. No, doctor, so and so. Oh, excuse me. Okay, I'm just Mister. I'm just Dominic.
Right. If that's the profession that you're leaving, you're going to have to give yourself some time to grieve the loss of that identity, but it's not going to be 100% loss. You're going to take so much of it with you.
Yeah.
You just might need to take a little like mental break to kind of like remove yourself just a little bit from it, but you will probably find yourself coming back to all of the things that made you a great doctor, right? Or made you a great lawyer, or made you a great architect, and they will be useful in whatever career you choose to pursue next. But you have to kind of, you know, thank it for, it's Marie Kondoing your career, right? You have to thank it for everything that it's given you, let it go, and what comes back to you is what you want to keep.
No, that's a powerful insight. I've heard that a couple of times with career changers I worked with, is this, you know, that shedding of identity is a huge thing, and it is something you have to grieve. I totally agree with this. And I think there's some self-awareness that comes in that process. But it just opens up the door to so much more though, too. So I think it's a necessary evil, if you will, to make some space, create some margin in your life for that process to naturally evolve. And the other thought I had around that is, you know, because what made you great in that past career, it wasn't necessarily the mastery of the content. I always tell people this. I'm like, you know, the knowledge that they teach you in the CFP, first of all, 99% of it's over the head of most people. And you don't use it on an everyday basis. I don't know how practical it is with the AFC, but with the CFP, there's a lot of stuff in there that you just don't use. But I would say also that the clients kind of expect you to know that, right? Like, you're a CFP, you should know that. Like, where you, I think you really excel though, is the empathy part, the listening part. You know, I have this acronym for what real financial advice is, which is it's relatable. It's attentive. It's listening. I think all these things that that you have to do, and I missed the E. It's empathetic. You have to do all these things in order for the relationship to work right. And so, all that to say, many of the things that made you great in your previous career are probably the intangibles. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, being a good listener, being able to break down complex concepts into something that, you know, somebody who doesn't have your background can understand, being able to communicate effectively, you know, there's all different types of professions where communication is at the core. And I think, especially when it comes to money, communication gets very muddled and people are very confused about what's going on with their money, why their money isn't working the way it's supposed to be, what's going on with the entire financial industry. So if you are a good communicator, that works for everything, right? Because it's about human interaction. That's what communication is for. And it's going to be, you know, a huge, huge boon if that's, you know, one, if that's one of your skills. And so I think thinking through all of the things that, you know, just like you said, those intangibles, those people skills, those soft skills, right? That's the buzzword that's going around right now. All those things that you can do at any job or, right, at anything where you are managing people. I was also a single mom. That was a huge boon for my legal career because I could manage clients. I could manage partners. I could manage up and down the chain because I know how to wrangle toddlers, right? These are all skills that are important when you're
I know your former colleagues love that you just compared them to toddlers. That's great.
It's dealing with difficult personalities. That's the skill set, right? That's what we put on the resume. but that it is a skill. And, you know, so I think thinking through, you know, when you're in these relationship businesses, there's all kinds of things that are just going to be relationship skills. And that's what you want to focus on. And that's what's going to make you a great, you know, financial counselor, a great financial coach, and also a great CFP, because yeah. You guys also have to do all of the same listening. You're just doing it, you know, for different goals.
No, I would agree. I've said before, and I'll have to say this again as we bring it in for the landing, is that I think some of the best advice I've given, or at least what clients have complimented me on, thinking that it's the CFP in me. No, it's really the husband and dad in me. I've been doing that much longer than the CFP. So I think that's part of it. Well, this has been great. As you know, this is a podcast to help empower tomorrow's financial professional with tools that will allow them to serve their client at the next level. So with that, Jessica, in mind, what word or words of wisdom would you leave with the audience?
My best tip for career changers is to find a community of like-minded individuals. Because when you make that switch, believe me, your old colleagues aren't going to want to hear about all the new stuff that you're doing. They have their own day jobs. Your family's not going to want to hear about all your entrepreneurial woes. They have their own stuff going on. Find people who are doing what you're doing and latch onto them. So that you can commiserate with them. You can, you know, be creative with them. It's such a huge boon, especially when you are going, you know, from being in a career that does have a system and a structure. You work for a firm or, you know, for a company, and you're going out on your own. It can be very disconcerting. And I think having a community of other entrepreneurs around is actually one of the most beneficial things that you can do. And it can make the difference between you really enjoying this experience and, you know, just flittering out and having it die on the table because you just don't have the energy to keep it up.
No, I wholeheartedly agree with that. I would even expand upon it, piggyback on that idea and say, whether you're working for yourself as an entrepreneur or you're going to work for somebody in a firm to be hired. I think finding that community makes all the difference because so much, I'm going to say it like this. I think transformation almost exclusively happens in community. It's hard to transform yourself by yourself with yourself. Like, it just doesn't work that way. You have to be around people that sharpen you, challenge you, affirm you, cry with you, like all these different things. Like you, those are elements to the transformation that most people want to have. So I mean, I can only put a pin in it from there. I think that's
it's always my number one tip for new entrepreneurs. I'm like, find a community, yeah. Please don't do this alone.
Right. You're right. I totally agree. I think that is, it's words for, just about anybody out there. Find your tribe, mm-hmm. so that those people can kind of come around you and help support you, because it's, you know, two is better than one. And, you know, definitely four is probably better than two. As long as everybody's like-minded. You said that at the beginning though. So that's great. Jessica Medina, this is great. I really, really appreciate your time, sharing your story, sharing your words of wisdom and perspective with this audience. We really appreciate you.
Thank you so much. Come find me on LinkedIn. That's where I am most prolific with the posting. But I love the podcast, Dominique, and I love everything that you're doing in this space. I think we need more people who subscribe to the empathetic version of financial counseling. And I know that that's exactly what you're trying to create.
I appreciate that very much. Thank you, and have a great rest of your day. Hey there. I really hope you enjoyed this conversation. Before we go, just a few things. The best way to retain what you just learned is to do more than just listen. First, you need to write down your most important takeaway, and then you need to give yourself a deadline to apply it. For bonus points, you might also let someone hold you accountable to that deadline. Also, remember, the only way more people will know about this podcast is if you share it. You can do that by sharing a link to this episode on your social media or by leaving a review on iTunes so that it reaches a wider audience. I'd appreciate if you took the time to do either or both. And finally, if you'd like to join my free community to learn more about how you can become a next generation financial professional, please text me at 214-544-9226. I'd love to hear from you and point you in the right direction. Bye for now, until our next conversation.